Today is Sunday, 7 June 2026.
And just looking at our top headlines today, we've got the latest from the NPR network regarding elections. Specifically, local law enforcement really stepping up election security across the U.S.
Yeah, and on the aviation side, Airbus is officially rethinking the launch of the highly anticipated A2-2500. So welcome, Elmar Conradi.
Right. As CEO of FlySafair, we know your time is your most constrained asset. So this is your deep dive briefing.
Exactly. No fluff, no filler. Just a really direct analysis of the macro, the geopolitical, and the industry forces shaping your operating environment today.
Yeah, we've got a massive stack of recent data to get through.
Right. So let's bypass the pleasantries and just jump straight into the most critical data impacting your core business right now, which is global aircraft supply.
Yeah, and Elmar, the numbers we're looking at this week are, well, they're truly staggering. The Airbus A320 family has officially surpassed 20,169 gross orders.
Wow, over 20,000.
Yeah, as of the end of May. They managed to add another 207 jets just this past month alone.
That's crazy.
Right, and right now there's more than 11,000 of these jets in active service globally. But here is the friction point that really matters for your fleet strategy.
Okay.
Airbus is aggressively aiming for a production rate of 75 units per month, but they are just being severely constrained by, you know, ongoing structural supply chain bottlenecks.
Okay, let's unpack the mechanics of this, because I mean, I complain when my coffee takes 5 minutes, let alone a decade for an aircraft, you know?
Right.
Looking at this order book, it's like an exclusive nightclub where the line to get in is 10 years long.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
If Airbus has 20,000 orders, but they can't actually hit that 75 a month target, I mean, aren't these just paper promises at this point?
Well, I'd push back slightly on the paper promises thing, just because airlines are committing real capital to secure those slots. But your underlying point is spot on.
Right. So if no one can get new metal, the old metal becomes the hottest commodity in town.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is how that colossal backlog directly impacts a carrier like FlySafair today, because the A320 and the A321 Neo variants are effectively sold out through the next decade. The intrinsic market value of your existing 737 and A320 assets is just surging.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Every single day, those production lines in Toulouse or Rettenstahl, the metal sitting on your tarmac in Johannesburg becomes more valuable.
So it's a massive win for the balance sheet then.
It's brilliant for your asset valuations, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, and this is a big, but it creates a brutally difficult environment for, you know, cheap capacity expansion or fleet renewal.
Because you can't just buy a new plane.
Right. You're operating in a market where replacement metal is historically scarce. You can't just call up a lessor and expect a discount on a narrow-body jet right now. The leverage is entirely on the side of the asset owners.
Which I guess brings us to the shifting dynamics in the narrow-body fleet pipeline. With the A320 line stretching into the 2030s, airlines are desperately looking for alternative metal.
They really are.
And the big news this week from Reuters is that Airbus is pausing the anticipated Farnborough launch of the stretched A220-500.
Yeah, this is huge.
I mean, AirAsia's Tony Fernandez is holding 150 options for this thing. Air Canada's Mark Nasr is waiting for range specs. And meanwhile, Finnair just chose the 134-seat Embraer E195-E2 over the A220.
Right. And before we analyze that Airbus decision, let's layer in the Boeing side. Boeing is opening a fourth 737 MAX lineup in Everett on July 6th.
Oh, okay.
They're targeting 52 jets a month next year, though the FAA cap remains firmly in place. Plus, U.S. major airlines project hiring 7,672 pilots in 2026.
Wow, almost 8,000.
Yeah. United alone is looking at 2,500, and American is at 2,000.
Wait, I need to stop and look at this Airbus decision for a second, because it feels counterintuitive. If AirAsia is dangling 150 options, why on earth would Airbus hit the brakes on the A220-500?
I know, it sounds crazy.
It's like refusing to sell a highly fuel-efficient sports car when there's a line out the door.
Well, it seems crazy until you look at who actually owns the global fleet, right?
Yeah.
Aviation is a lessor-controlled ecosystem. Lessors, like Avalon's Angus Kelly, are terrified.
Terrified of what? The new plane.
Yeah. A highly efficient 180-seat A220-500 directly overlaps with the lower end of the A320neo market. Lessors hold massive fleets of A320neos. If Airbus launches a cheaper, more efficient plane in that exact same category, it destroys the residual values of those neo fleets.
Ah, I see. So if the lessors' existing planes drop in value, their whole business model tanks. They're basically strong-arming Airbus into protecting their investments.
That is the open secret of the industry right now. And for FlySafair, Lessors protecting those values means lease rates for your 737 and A320 fleet will remain stubbornly high.
So no cheap relief coming anytime soon.
None. And tying in that U.S. pilot hiring wave, nearly 8,000 pilots, that creates a massive vacuum. The majors suck at the talent, regionals scramble, and eventually that vacuum reaches emerging markets.
Meaning Elmar has to fiercely protect his experienced captains from international poaching.
Exactly. The global appetite for left-seat talent is immense.
Right. But operating those planes requires a stable domestic environment. Let's look at the SA business and macro landscape.
We'll do it.
The RAND is currently sitting at 16.30 against the U.S. dollar. But domestically, ESCOM is implementing severe, deliberate 11 to 14-hour power outages across the Eastern Cape, specifically the Raymond Malaba municipality, on June 17 and 18 for system maintenance.
Yeah, 14 hours is brutal.
And simultaneously, Gauteng is facing daily 4 to 5 hour load reduction blocks targeting illegal connections. Now, wait, haven't we gone over 300 days without national load shedding?
Yeah, we have.
So why are we seeing 14 hour blackouts in the Eastern Cape and daily cuts in Gauteng?
Well, this is distribution protection, not a national generation failure. The national grid has the megawatts, but the localized municipal transformers are literally burning out from overloading and illegal connections.
So the pipes are bursting, essentially.
Right. And for Elmar, this presents a really nuanced picture. The positive side is that the ZAR holding at 16.3 helps buffer dollar-denominated fuel import costs.
Right. But those localized power cuts, I mean, they hammer regional SME productivity.
Absolutely.
If a small business can't operate for 14 hours, revenue drops. And then the disposable income of the middle class just shrinks.
And that directly degrades the domestic travel demand that a low-cost carrier relies on. A family dealing with a 5-hour daily outage just isn't booking a weekend flight to Cape Town.
Makes sense. But South Africa's currency and fuel costs don't operate in a vacuum. Let's talk geopolitics.
Always a fun topic for airline margins.
Right. We're seeing escalation in the Middle East. The Israeli army has warned of imminent strikes against Hezbollah in Seraphon, Lebanon, with fatal drone strikes already hitting Nabati.
Right.
And concurrently, Pakistan's interior minister is in Tehran for high-level talks. It feels like a geopolitical powder keg where everyone is playing with matches right next to the oil supply.
That's exactly how airline executives are modeling it.
Yeah.
Any conflict dragging in Iran immediately threatens the Strait of Hormuz.
Which is the absolute choke point for global energy.
Right. And for a low-cost carrier like FlySafair, fuel is your single largest variable cost. Even the rumor of a supply constraint injects a premium into Brent crude.
Eating directly into the operating margins?
Regardless of how perfectly you run the airline locally, yes. You're at the mercy of tremors you have no control over.
And when those geopolitical fault lines tremor, institutional capital reacts instantly, usually shifting out of frontier risk assets. Let's look at the crypto market.
Let's look at the numbers.
BlackRock has dumped $213.7 million from its Bitcoin ETF, the iBit. And that led a broader wave of $325.7 million in total outflows from Bitcoin ETFs.
That's a massive move.
Is this just the usual crypto volatility, or is institutional money sending us a broader signal here? Because BlackRock doesn't move $250 million by accident.
No, they don't. This isn't retail panic on a message board. It's a calculated institutional risk-off signal.
Meaning they're pulling chips off the table.
Exactly. Fast liquid assets are being dumped as capital seeks safety amid global uncertainty.
Okay, but while capital flees speculative crypto, it is aggressively pouring into fundamental tech. Let's talk AI and tech.
The Anthropic update is wild.
Yeah. Anthropic has warned that its AI model, Claude, is now writing over 80% of its own merged code.
80%.
Right. The company is publicly calling for an option to pause frontier AI development due to the risks of recursive self-improvement. And meanwhile, new 2026 AI benchmarks like AIM 2025 and Suffly Bench Pro show just exponential capability jumps.
It's moving incredibly fast.
Recursive self-improvement sounds terrifying, like a sci-fi movie. Should businesses actually be pulling back?
Well, for FlySafair's AI investment, particularly your internal system, Lucy, this is a double-edged sword.
How so?
The capabilities for predictive maintenance and customer service automation are exploding, but relying on external APIs from companies that might suddenly pause their models is a massive operational risk.
Oh, because if the vendor pulls the plug, your operations go dark.
Exactly. Elmar must ensure FlySafair's AI architecture has robust fail-safes or local hosting contingencies. You can't outsource your operational brain to an API that might hit the emergency brake.
Right. Yet, for all this digital acceleration, the global economy still rests on physical commodities and fiat currencies. let's get into commodities and markets.
Yeah, the macro drivers.
The U.S. dollar index has surged past the 100 mark to a two-month high, driven by a surprisingly strong U.S. jobs report showing 172,000 positions added in May.
And just a quick material update on natural gas. We are seeing a slight uptick of positive 0.116 there.
Okay, but on the dollar, a strong U.S. economy usually lifts all boats, right? Why is a surging dollar index a problem for emerging markets?
Because a strong dollar acts as a structural headwind for the ZAR.
Oh, right. Because of imports.
Exactly. Even if global oil prices remain flat, a surging dollar makes jet fuel imports significantly more expensive for flights of fare. It just invisibly squeezes your ticket margins.
Wow. That currency pressure really highlights how crucial domestic stability is for weathering those economic headwinds. Which brings us to SA politics.
Let's go through the impartial updates here.
Right, just as a matter of public record. MK Party MP Edward Nchingula passed away on Friday at age 43 after a prolonged illness. He had just joined the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence in March.
Yes.
And tying back to our intro, we're also tracking NPR reports about local law enforcement having to step up to secure elections in the U.S.
Right, and looking at the parliamentary update, impartially, purely through a business lens, shifts in key oversight committees, like intelligence, inevitably cause legislative friction.
It alters power dynamics in parliament.
Exactly. And for business leaders, any delay or instability in governance translates directly to regulatory uncertainty.
Which makes capital allocation difficult.
Very. And zooming out from local governance, all of this feeds into the ultimate macro narrative governing the global flow of capital. Let's hit the world economy.
Right. That strong U.S. jobs data is colliding with rising global risks. Ray Dalio is sounding the alarm on U.S. debt and borrowing costs.
And China's property crisis is spreading. We're seeing homeowners actively stopping the payment of property fees.
It feels like the global economy is an aircraft trying to land with a massive crosswind. You've got debt pushing on one side and sticky inflation pushing on the other.
That's a perfect analogy. The risk of stagflation is rising. High borrowing costs in the U.S. draw capital away from emerging markets, keeping the cost of capital really high for asset-heavy businesses like airlines.
So what's the play for Elmar?
It underscored the need for lean operations and strict cash preservation as global trade flows slow down. You have to play defense.
All right, Elmar, to synthesize everything, here are the three things to watch this week.
Number one. The July 6 Boeing Everett line. Watch to see if Boeing can actually hit its new 52 jet per month production target, or if the FAA cap and supply chains throttle them.
Number two, the Eastern Cape power cuts on June 17 and 18. Monitor the economic fallout and consumer sentiment dip from Eskom's 14-hour maintenance blackouts.
And number three, the Farnborough Air Show in July. Keep an eye on Airbus. Will they capitulate to AirAsia's demands and launch the A220-500 or bend to the lessors and protect A320neo lease rates?
We've covered a ton of ground today. And I want to leave you, Elmar, with a final provocative thought that builds on that AI segment.
Yeah, this is a big one.
As AI models like Claude write 80% of their own code and engage in recursive self-improvement, how long will it be until an autonomous AI agent is negotiating aircraft leases, optimizing FlySafair's flight routes, and managing dynamic pricing better than any human dispatcher or CFO ever could?
It's coming faster than we think.
Something to plan for. Thank you for tuning into this briefing, Elmar. We'll be back next time to keep you ahead of the curve. Keep flying safe.